At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
You're at a sushi restaurant, chopsticks in hand, ready to enjoy a beautifully crafted piece of nigiri. The chef has placed a small, neat dollop of a vibrant green paste on the side of your plate. You take a tiny bit, mix it into your soy sauce, and dip the fish. An intense, fiery heat instantly rushes up your nose, a sharp, pungent kick that makes your eyes water for a moment, and then, just as quickly, it's gone, leaving a clean, spicy aftertaste. You've had this experience 100 times. You know exactly what that green paste is. It's wasabi. But what if I told you that you've probably never actually tasted real wasabi in your entire life? What if that familiar, fiery green paste is an imposter, a clever stand-in for something much rarer, more complex, and far more expensive? Welcome back to How Does That Work? In today's episode, we're uncovering the secrets of one of the world's most prized and misunderstood condiments. We're going to explore the long, difficult journey of authentic wasabi, from a remote Japanese mountain stream to a high-end sushi bar, and find out how it's really made. The story of wasabi doesn't begin in a sushi bar, but deep in the history of Japan, long before it was ever paired with raw fish. The first encounters with wasabi were with the wild plant Wasabia japonica, growing naturally in the cool, gravelly streams of remote mountain valleys. Archaeological evidence suggests that the people of Japan were gathering and consuming wild plants like wasabi for thousands of years. But the first written records of wasabi appear around the 8th century, during the Nara period. These ancient documents don't mention wasabi as a food, but as a medicine. The characters used to write wasabi at the time literally translated to mountain hollyhock, and early herbalists prized it for its powerful medicinal properties. It was used as a natural antiseptic, an antidote for food poisoning, and a digestive aid, among other things. Its natural antibacterial qualities were likely discovered by observing its effects, making it a valuable resource in an era without refrigeration. The deliberate cultivation of wasabi, the transition from foraging to farming, is said to have begun during the Keicho era, around the early 1600s. The story goes that villagers in what is now the Shizuoka Prefecture discovered they could transplant the wild seedlings into the carefully prepared, man-made stream beds that mirrored the plant's natural habitat. Legend has it that the great shogun, Tokugawa Ieyasu, the founder of the shogunate that would rule Japan for over 250 years, became captivated by wasabi. He was so taken with its unique flavor and its beautiful, heart-shaped leaves that he declared it a treasure to be grown exclusively in the Shizuoka region, and he kept the cultivation techniques a closely guarded secret. Whether the story is entirely true or not, it highlights the high value that was placed on wasabi from very early on, elevating it from a folk medicine to a delicacy reserved for the ruling class. For centuries, even as cultivation spread, wasabi remained a rare and expensive ingredient, enjoyed mostly by the nobility and the samurai elite. Its pairing with raw fish, which seems so natural to us today, didn't become widespread until the end of the Edo period in the early 19th century. This was the era when modern sushi was born on the streets of Edo, which is now Tokyo. Street vendors began selling nigiri sushi as a fast, convenient meal. At the time, with no way to keep the fish cold, food safety was a major concern. The sushi chefs began adding a small amount of freshly grated wasabi between the rice and the fish. They did this not just for the flavor, but because they knew of wasabi's traditional reputation as an antibacterial agent that could help counteract the risks of eating raw seafood. The sharp, clean heat also had the wonderful side effect of cutting through the richness of the fish and cleansing the palate. This brilliant combination of flavor and function was a hit, and the tradition of serving wasabi with sushi was cemented, eventually spreading from the street stalls of Tokyo to the rest of the world. Now let's solve the biggest mystery. What is that green paste you've been eating if it isn't wasabi? In the vast majority of cases, over 95% of the time, the wasabi served in restaurants and sold in tubes at the grocery store is a clever imitation. It's a paste made primarily from horseradish, a completely different plant. Horseradish provides a similar potent heat. To complete the illusion, manufacturers add mustard flour to intensify the kick, cornstarch to create a pasty texture, and a healthy dose of green food coloring to mimic wasabi's signature color. It's a cheap and shelf-stable alternative that delivers the powerful, eye-watering punch that most of us have come to associate with sushi. Real wasabi, on the other hand, is something else entirely. Authentic wasabi comes from the rhizome, which is the thick, underground stem of a plant called Wasabia japonica, or Japanese horseradish. This plant is a member of the Brassicaceae family, which also includes mustard and, you guessed it, horseradish. But despite being distant cousins, they are very different. The wasabi plant is notoriously difficult to grow, which is the main reason it's so rare and expensive. It's a diva of the plant world, demanding a very specific and challenging environment to thrive. It can't be grown in a typical field. Instead, it grows naturally along the rocky beds of cool, shady mountain streams in Japan. To cultivate wasabi commercially, farmers must go to incredible lengths to replicate these exact conditions. The most prized wasabi is grown in specially engineered fields that look like terraced, gravel-lined stream beds. These fields, often hundreds of years old, are built on mountain slopes with a constant gentle flow of cool, fresh spring water running over the rocks. The wasabi plants need this continuous flowing water to deliver nutrients and oxygen, but they can't be fully submerged. They also require constant shade, as direct sunlight can scorch their large, heart-shaped leaves. The temperature has to be just right, staying within a cool, narrow range. This painstaking process, combined with the fact that a wasabi rhizome can take up to 2 years to reach maturity, makes wasabi farming an incredibly challenging and expensive art form. Because the growing conditions are so specific and difficult, not all authentic wasabi is considered equal. In the world of wasabi connoisseurs, there is a clear hierarchy, and it all comes down to how and where the plant was grown. The highest grade, the most prized and expensive wasabi you can find, is called Sawa wasabi, which translates to mountain stream wasabi. This is the type we've been talking about, the one painstakingly cultivated in those terraced, gravel-lined fields with a constant flow of cool, clear water. This method most closely mimics the plant's natural habitat, and it produces a rhizome with the most complex and sought-after flavor profile, a clean, sharp heat, balanced by a distinct sweetness and a delicate aromatic finish. There is another, much lower grade of authentic wasabi called Oka wasabi, or land wasabi. As the name implies, this variety is grown in a field of soil, much like other root vegetables. It doesn't have the benefit of the constantly flowing, mineral-rich spring water. While it is still technically Wasabia japonica, the resulting rhizome is very different. Growing in soil is much easier and cheaper, but it produces wasabi that is considered inferior in quality. Oka wasabi tends to have a much harsher, more aggressive, and one-dimensional spiciness, and it lacks the subtle sweetness and aromatic complexity of its water-grown cousin. Most of the real wasabi that gets processed and turned into powders or pastes for commercial sale is made from this lower-grade OK wasabi. The premium Sawa wasabi is almost always sold as whole, fresh rhizomes to high-end restaurants and specialty markets. Even within the top-tier Sawa wasabi, there are different cultivars, just like there are different kinds of apples, such as Granny Smith or Fuji, each with a slightly different taste. Wasabi farmers cultivate famous strains like Daruma and Mazuma. A Daruma rhizome might be prized for its pale green color and a taste that is milder and sweeter, while a Mazuma might be known for its darker appearance and a more intensely spicy kick. A sushi chef might even choose a specific cultivar based on the type of fish they are serving. So for those truly dedicated to the art of sushi, the journey doesn't end at just finding real wasabi. It extends into appreciating the subtle but distinct differences between the high-quality varieties, each one a testament to the unique mountain stream in which it was grown. Once a mature wasabi rhizome is harvested, the process of turning it into the famous paste is both a tradition and a science. You can't just chop it up or put it in a blender. The unique flavor and heat of wasabi are the result of a chemical reaction that only happens when the plant's cells are crushed. Inside the wasabi cells, there are compounds called glucosinolates and an enzyme called myrosinase. In a whole, undamaged rhizome, these two are kept separate. But when you begin to grate the wasabi, the cell walls are broken and these two components mix. This is the magic moment. The myrosinase enzyme instantly starts converting the glucosinolates into new compounds called isothiocyanates. It is one of these, allyl isothiocyanate, that creates the signature pungent heat of wasabi. To truly appreciate what's happening, it's helpful to compare the heat of wasabi to the heat of a chili pepper. They feel completely different for a fascinating chemical reason. The molecule responsible for the burn in a chili pepper is called capsaicin. Capsaicin is a large, heavy, oily molecule. When you eat a hot pepper, these heavy molecules physically bind to the pain receptors on your tongue. Because they are oily and don't dissolve in water, they stick around, which is why the burning sensation in your mouth lingers and builds, and why drinking water doesn't seem to help much. The heat molecule in wasabi, allyl isothiocyanate, is the complete opposite. It is a very small, light and volatile compound. The word volatile in chemistry means it can easily evaporate and become a gas at room temperature. When you put freshly grated wasabi in your mouth, these tiny molecules don't just stay on your tongue. They quickly turn into a vapor that travels up the back of your throat and into your nasal cavity. The burn you feel from wasabi isn't primarily on your tongue. It's the sensation of these gaseous molecules irritating the sensitive receptors inside your nose. This is what creates that iconic eye-watering rush that feels like it's clearing your sinuses. And because these molecules are so light and volatile, they don't stick around. They deliver their punch and then dissipate very quickly, leaving your mouth clean and ready for the next bite. So, while the capsaicin in a chili pepper is like a heavy sticky oil that coats your mouth, the allyl isothiocyanate in wasabi is like a light, airy vapor that gives you a quick, sharp jab in the nose and then vanishes almost as quickly as it arrived. It's a completely different kind of chemical warfare, one that is sharp and fleeting rather than a slow, lingering burn. This critical need to rupture the cell walls gently is why the tool used for grating is so incredibly important. While you could use a modern metal grater, a true wasabi connoisseur would only use a traditional tool called an oroshigane, specifically one with a surface made of sharkskin. This isn't just for tradition, it's a matter of pure material science. A metal grater, with its sharp, punched-out holes, has a tendency to shred and tear the wasabi's delicate fibers. This aggressive action can release bitter-tasting compounds from the plant, and it often creates a watery, chunky paste. The goal isn't to shred the wasabi, but to lovingly crush it into a smooth, creamy, and almost velvety paste, maximizing the surface area to get the most potent chemical reaction. This is where the unique properties of shark skin come in. A shark's skin isn't covered in scales like other fish. It's covered in what are called dermal denticles, which literally means tiny skin teeth. These denticles are made of the same materials as actual teeth, with a hard enamel coating. This gives the surface of the shark skin a texture that is remarkably like a very fine, natural sandpaper. The individual bumps are small, irregular, and not nearly as sharp as the edges of a metal grater. When a chef takes the wasabi rhizome and grates it in a slow circular motion on the shark skin, the thousands of tiny denticles act like a miniature mortar and pestle. They don't slice or shred. They crush the plant's cells, breaking them open efficiently and gently. This creates an exceptionally fine and smooth paste, ensuring that the maximum number of cells are ruptured so the flavor-creating enzymes and compounds can mix perfectly. This gentle crushing action releases the sweet, aromatic notes of the wasabi without introducing the unwanted bitterness that can come from tearing it. After grating, the chef will use a small bamboo brush to sweep the beautiful pale green paste from the grater and form it into a small ball, letting it rest for a minute or two to allow that volatile chemical reaction to reach its peak of flavor and pungency just before it is served. But here's the most critical part. That flavor is incredibly volatile. The allyl isothiocyanate compound that provides the kick is unstable and begins to break down as soon as it's exposed to air. The intense, fiery heat and delicate, slightly sweet and aromatic flavor of freshly grated wasabi will peak in about 5 minutes and be almost completely gone within 15 to 20 minutes. This is the main reason you will never see a bowl of real wasabi paste sitting on the table at a restaurant. A true sushi master will grate the wasabi rhizome fresh to order, often placing the perfect amount directly on the sushi just moments before serving it. It's a fleeting, ephemeral experience. The impasta, on the other hand, made from horseradish and mustard, gets its aggressive, lingering heat from different, more stable compounds, which is why it can be made in a factory and sit in a tube for months without losing its punch. So how can you tell the difference? The easiest way is by the appearance. Fake wasabi is usually a uniform, pasty, and often bright, almost neon, green from the food coloring. Real, freshly grated wasabi has a much more natural, pale, and muted green color. It also has a slightly gritty, pulpy texture from the grated plant fibers, not a perfectly smooth paste, but the biggest giveaway is the taste. The horseradish impasta provides a powerful, one-dimensional blast of heat that attacks the tongue and lingers. Real wasabi has a more complex flavor profile. The heat is sharp and clean, and it primarily hits the nasal passages, creating that classic up-the-nose sensation. But it's followed by a subtle, almost herbal sweetness, and it fades quickly, cleansing the palate and enhancing the delicate flavor of the fish rather than overpowering it. It's a refined and elegant experience, a world away from the brute force of its common substitute. Despite its revered place in culinary history, the future of authentic wasabi is surprisingly fragile. The very same delicate conditions that make the sour wasabi plant so special also make it incredibly vulnerable to the pressures of the modern world. Today, traditional wasabi farmers in Japan are facing a perfect storm of environmental and demographic challenges that threaten this ancient agricultural art. One of the biggest threats is climate change. Wasabi requires a constant, stable supply of cool water, typically between 10 and 15 degrees Celsius. Rising global temperatures are warming the mountain springs, and a change of even a few degrees can be devastating, stunting the plant's growth or killing it outright. Furthermore, increasingly frequent and powerful typhoons bring heavy rains that can cause landslides, wiping out the painstakingly maintained terraced fields that have been passed down through generations for centuries. At the same time, there is a human challenge. Wasabi farming is incredibly labor-intensive work, often done in remote, isolated mountain communities. Japan's population is aging, and younger generations are increasingly moving to cities, leaving fewer and fewer people to take over the family farms. The demanding work, combined with the constant risk of a failed crop, makes it a difficult life. This problem is made even worse by the global dominance of the cheap horseradish substitute. As most of the world has grown accustomed to the fake version, the market for true expensive wasabi remains a niche, putting economic pressure on the remaining farmers who are struggling to preserve their heritage. Faced with these challenges, growers and scientists are looking for innovative ways to secure wasabi's future. Outside of Japan, a handful of pioneers are attempting to grow wasabi in high-tech greenhouses, using advanced hydroponic and climate control systems to precisely replicate the cool, watery environment of a Japanese mountain stream. This approach removes the threat of weather and allows wasabi to be grown closer to international markets. At the same time, researchers are working to develop new, more resilient cultivars of the wasabi plant, strains that might be able to tolerate slightly warmer water or grow more quickly. The hope is that through a combination of preserving ancient traditions and embracing modern technology, we can ensure that the fleeting, complex, and truly magical experience of real wasabi doesn't fade into history. So the next time you sit down for a sushi dinner and see that little green mound on your plate, you'll know the whole story. You'll know to look for the gritty texture and pale green color of the real thing. And whether it's the horseradish impasta or the rare, authentic rhizome, you'll understand the incredible history and science behind it. From an ancient medicine in a mountain stream, to the secret of a shogun, to a modern farmer's struggle against a changing climate. It's a story that proves how even the smallest condiment can have a rich and complex history.